Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Food Friday, a cookbook author talks to us about heritage grains and flours and why they can be a better choice for the environment and for our cooking. Now, there's a lot of election-related news here in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Elections Commissioner Dean Knutson resigned from the board. Knutson, a Republican appointee, said that officials, quote, from the highest levels of the Republican Party, end quote, did not want him to lead the bipartisan group because he doesn't deny the results of the 2020 election. And former President Donald Trump endorsed Wisconsin Republican candidate Tim Michaels in his primary campaign for governor. We're checking out the latest election news in Wisconsin, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have your eye on this elections commission story? Do you have a question about what it means, how it works? Waiting on an appointee to that could come down even during the show. Potentially, what are you hoping for or worried about? And in the race for governor, does President Trump's, a former President Trump's endorsement matter to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Sean Johnson is WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. Sean, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob.
Let's start with Dean Knutson, now resigning from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, saying it's because fellow Republicans criticized him for not saying the 2020 election was fraudulent. Here's a listen.
In this case, the painful truth is that President Trump lost the election in 2020, lost the election in Wisconsin in 2020. And the loss was not due to election fraud.
Sean, what do we know about what pushed Knutson to step down from the commission?
So I think it's significant that he made this announcement. He stepped down from the commission right before the commission was about to select a new chair. And this is a commission that is split 3-3 between Republicans and Democrats. And the state law that set it up, the commission chair position has to shift back and forth every 2 years from Republicans to Democrats. So the current chair is a Democrat. That meant the next chair was going to be a Republican. It can't be one of a couple clerks on the committee. So that meant it was either going to be Knutson or Bob Spindell, an outspoken critic of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who was openly campaigning to be chair of the agency. So you had this situation where, because you got to get four votes to be elected chair, there was a chance that Knutson was going to get elected chair, even though he wasn't running for it, even though Spindell wanted it. And Knutson says Republicans leaned on him to get out of that race. They didn't want him to be chair. Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, actually kind of laid claim to that, put out a statement and said that he had talked to Speaker Voss. Speaker Voss appointed Knutson to this commission and told Voss that Knutson no longer had the support of the grassroots Republicans in Wisconsin.
Why does this position of committee chair matter?
I don't know that the position of committee chair matters as much as like the chair of the legislature's budget committee, for example. It doesn't have that kind of power. I mean, they can force some procedural votes or steer debates procedurally at times to their advantage. But it's not like they exactly hold a lot of additional power over the other commissioners. They kind of have the bully pulpit. They can speak for the commission in a way that the others can't at times. But, you know, that also is debatable. I think right now, really, because there's only six people who serve on this elections commission, and everything involving elections is under such a spotlight right now, and seems like it will continue to be in Wisconsin, every person who serves on this panel, is a big deal. And so now that you have an opening, it's a kind of a big question as to who's going to fill it.
Right. So the next chair is either going to be a Bob Spindell or TBD. Let's look at each of those in turn. Bob Spindell got a lot of controversy because he signed a thing saying he was an elector from Wisconsin after the 2020 election. The case was made by a lot of those electors or self-proclaimed electors that, well, this was just if courts overturned the outcome of the election, gave it over to Trump, then they would step in. Some of the people who did that in other states specifically included language saying, we're just doing this in case it flips. That didn't happen in Wisconsin. That's gotten a lot of criticism, some efforts in courts, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lawsuit brought against Spindell and the other Republicans who posed as electors in Wisconsin and like saying that they violated a variety of state and federal laws. This is something that Democrats have asked about as part of this January 6th commission at the U.S. Capitol. And, you know, Spindell was one of those 10 people who the Republicans who met at the same time as Wisconsin's actual electors signed documents, official looking documents, sent them to, you know, the National Archives, the president of the U.S. Senate, the Secretary of State, the chief judge for the Western District of Wisconsin, all the places where actual electors' certificates are to be sent. They sent these, the GOP electors sent them there too, and without any kind of legal force. So that has given Spindell a special, I guess, distinction on this commission. But I think beyond that, if you've listened to any commission meeting, you know that he is certainly an outspoken critic of the agency at times. And I would say Knudsen was too, has been also, but not in the same way as Spindell.
So that's Bob Spindell. Then there's TBD. What do we know about who's going to get appointed? It's Speaker Voss, as you mentioned, who makes this appointment. What do we know about who and when? And when could literally be 2 minutes ago. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, TBD has a pretty good chance of being chair of the commission, really, just because whoever is gets in there is going to need one Democrat to vote for them along with the Republicans, at least. And so, you know, I think Spindell just has kind of, he faces headwinds on that committee, we'll say, in order to win Democratic support. We don't know who Voss, Speaker Voss, would pick. The way that the commission is, you know, divvied up, you have one commissioner each is appointed by the Assembly Speaker, the Senate Majority Leader, the Senate Minority Leader, and the Assembly Minority Leader. So Dean Knudsen was Robin Voss's pick for the commission, so he gets to pick a new person now. He has said that he's keeping all of his options open. You know, he hasn't ruled anybody out. He said he kind of liked to have an attorney on there because, you know, Democrats have attorneys on that commission. And, you know, when you come down to some of the issues that come before the board, that it seems like the attorneys are sometimes making arguments, trying to win support of like one of the clerks that's on the panel. So that's somebody the Voss has said that he'd like to have is like a hard charging conservative, I think is the way that he phrased it. And an attorney. You might also, I think potentially look at some of these Republican lawmakers who served under Voss in the assembly. You know, they may be somebody who's available to serve on a commission like this, but we don't have any names yet.
Talking to WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson about big election news in the state. That's the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And now we have a Republican primary in the race for governor, people looking to challenge Governor Tony Evers this November. Much anticipated, I think, endorsement from former President Trump. What did he say?
He said that Tim Michaels is his candidate for governor in this Republican primary. And, you know, and anything that he says after that almost doesn't matter. He has given his name, the Trump name, to Tim Michaels to use in this primary where he's facing other candidates who also wanted the Trump endorsement. You know, Rebecca Clayfish, the former lieutenant governor, and the person supported by the Scott Walker machine, including Scott Walker in this campaign. Tim Rampton, a state lawmaker who has been a very outspoken supporter of Donald Trump, even called for the legislature to try to revoke the 2020 election results, you know, on behalf of Trump. Has really stuck his neck out there for the former president. He didn't get the endorsement. Clayfish didn't get the endorsement. Michaels did. And that has been a game changer in some Republican primaries where Trump's backing has helped a Republican emerge from a crowded field. Didn't happen in Georgia, which we heard about in the news recently, where Trump's pick got beaten badly by the incumbent candidate there. But in other races where you don't have an incumbent and it's more of a wide open field, that endorsement has been big, and it could be big for Tim Michaels, who also has shown a willingness to spend his own money in that race and can really amplify the Trump endorsement that way.
Sean Johnson is WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief with us to talk about the latest election news here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As you watch this Republican field in the race for governor, does former President Trump's endorsement matter to you? Do you think, if you're going to play political analyst for a moment, do you think it's going to matter to Republican voters in the state? If you're watching either of these contested primaries for governor or for U.S. Senate, do you have strong feelings about one candidate or another, or are you going to vote for or against them no matter what? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How about the Wisconsin Elections Commission? What do you want to see come out of this new appointment? Do you support getting rid of it as the Republican candidates for governor do? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson about the latest election news here in Wisconsin, including the resignation of Wisconsin Elections Commissioner Dean Knutson and what's going to come next, and former President Trump's endorsement of a Republican candidate for governor, Tim Michaels. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What are you watching for in this election? What are you wanting to hear from candidates in those primary fields for governor, Republicans, or Senate, Democrats? 800-642-1234 is the number. Tom joins us now in Madison. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I grew up in Chicago, and I describe a lot of Wisconsin politics as gerrymandering that would make the Daily Machine Democrat blush. I've never seen anything like it. But I think the thing that offends me more than just straight politics is Ron Johnson's disinformation when it comes to COVID. I think creating fear where there is really no fear, it's based on nothing. When you actually get taken off YouTube because your claims are so false, this is playing around with people's lives and infection rates. And to me, this is beyond the pale and beyond politics. I hope he's defeated soundly.
Thanks a lot for the call. A couple points there, Sean. You've, of course, followed gerrymandering quite closely with the Mapped Out podcast. New edition dropped just this week. Tom compares Illinois, a pretty heavily gerrymandered state by Democrats, to Wisconsin. Where does Wisconsin stand on the map of gerrymandered maps?
I think the distinction in Wisconsin is that, you know, we are a more of a 50-50 state in terms of our electorate. And so when you have a big Republican margin here, it ends up being, you know, in terms of like the partisan representation of the state, it is more askew, I guess, compared to Illinois, where you do have a Democratic edge in that state, but they have kind of parlayed that into a huge Democratic edge, especially in their congressional map.
And then Senator Johnson, we haven't talked about the race for Senate there. We've got a bunch of Democratic candidates lining up in the primary. Ron Johnson, of course, the incumbent running for a third term. Polling, at least, has shown some pretty big negatives for Senator Johnson. That said, he's overcome some tough polls in his previous elections.
Yeah, I think Senator Johnson in this cycle, from what we can tell, based on the polling from Marquette University, has higher negatives than he's ever had before. More people know him this time around than have known him before, but you have both positive and negative opinions of him, and then those negatives, those people who disapprove of his time in office, are climbing. I think it is kind of maybe an open question at this point as to which race, the race for governor or the race for U.S. Senate, will be the marquee race in Wisconsin. You know, I think that probably you would say conventional wisdom say the U.S. Senate race, once there's a Democrat chosen in that primary and they're facing off against Johnson, there's 100 U.S. senators and they obviously holding, you know, extreme power in this country. But we just have two really huge elections here in a statewide level in Wisconsin.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Bob now in Milwaukee. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Thanks for taking. Well, basically, I was going to bring up as far as I voted for Evers last time, but I'm not really impressed with his pretty much anything he's done so far as far as being a leader. But you guys brought up Ron Johnson, and I didn't know that we were talking about Ron Johnson, but Ron Johnson, I'm a doctor, and he really hasn't brought up anything on COVID that isn't being talked about by other doctors. And so I really feel like the CDC has basically promoted more fear than anybody else.
So do you have a candidate you like on the Republican side to challenge Evers?
Well, yeah, I was going to say about whether Trump's endorsement matters or not. I basically am looking at, you know, all sides. I consider myself an independent, but it basically is like Trump's endorsement doesn't really mean one thing or the other, but I'm sure to some people it would.
Gotcha. Bob, thanks a lot. And Sean, that's going to be a big question here. How much people, especially people who are going to vote in a Republican primary, are going to focus on an endorsement from the former president?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be like the thing that totally tips the race. I think you'd be hard pressed to find an endorsement in Republican politics that matters more than Trump's in 2022. I mean, there's a reason these candidates made trips down to Florida to try to win that endorsement. You know, it's because it could be a game changer in their race. You could imagine that if Rebecca Clayfish, who already has kind of this grassroots support around the state from having built this campaign or the foundation for this campaign for governor for years, has the support of people like Scott Walker, for example. If she had won the Trump endorsement, I think it would have been very hard for one of the other candidates to say, you know, I can take down Rebecca Clayfish. I think by Tim Michaels winning, that coupled with his personal wealth and his willing to spend it, seems like at the very least it opens a door for him to challenge Clayfish. And, you know, there are definitely people out there who would go much farther than that in terms of how they would describe the endorsement. Anthony Trudkowski, who I talked to for a story on this endorsement last night, UW La Crosse political science professor, he says it makes Michaels the front runner, and he doesn't really see it halfway. You know, he says, like, if you just look at the timing of this, it's June. People are just now starting to pay attention to the primary for governor. It gives Michaels a chance to really drive this endorsement home. But, you know, we'll see. Rebecca Clayfish has a lot of people backing her.
Thanks for that call. Talking to Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief, about the latest Wisconsin election-related news. Back to your calls. Nate is with us in Westfield. Nate, hi.
Thanks for taking the call, guys. I'm just going to chime in a little bit on this issue of Clayfish. I'm really a Democrat, but we saw what Bernie Sanders followers, how they felt. And once somebody, like I'm talking about the ladies here, once they glom on to a woman having a chance, and then she's being bypassed, and then you got the confounding factor of what's going on with abortion, I'm not sure that you can simply endorse Michaels as being the front runner.
Nate, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Sean, Nate thinking there could be, I guess, bad blood among Republicans, especially Clayfish supporters.
Yeah, and you might see this race become more negative here because Michaels may think that even though he has Trump's endorsement at this point, he may feel like he needs to go negative at some point in order to, you know, surpass Clayfish. She may feel threatened by the Trump endorsement or, you know, the Michaels approach and may go negative on him. Kevin Nicholson, who is running for governor, has also painted himself as this outsider candidate and has definitely already gone negative against Clayfish and Michaels. And so you've got that factor in the race. You know, I haven't heard Tim Ramthen, the state representative from Campbellsport, go negative on other Republicans in the same way. But, you know, he's kind of a factor in the race because of the way that he's talked about the 2020 election. But yeah, the temperature of the primary could get turned up here if the candidates feel like they need to attack each other instead of Evers in order to win the GOP nomination in August.
Thanks for the call, Nate. Renee joins us now in Milwaukee. Renee, hi.
Hi. I'm a registered Republican, but I'm thoroughly disgusted by Republicans. And I want to vote in the primary and maybe throw a monkey wrench in there. So who is the least probable primary Republican candidate that I should vote for?
Renee, thanks for the call. Sean, I think sometimes politicians try to play that, like, can we get the weakest opponent? It seems like a tough game to play, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to, like, people talk about election conspiracies, but something like that is pretty tough to pull off, to have, you know, voters around the state all think the same way and, you know, choose a candidate that would be easiest for the Democrat to beat in the general election in this, for instance. So I'm not going to speculate on that one.
Thanks for the call. I should ask, I heard a rumor you were interviewing Tim Michaels today, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I had a few minutes to talk to Tim Michaels about the endorsement and just ask him about whether there were kind of any strings attached to this endorsement. He said that he made no promises to President Trump. However, he does kind of echo what you hear from Trump in terms of the way that the 2020 election has been portrayed. You know, I had a chance to ask him if he thought that President Joe Biden had won Wisconsin, and Tim Michaels declined to say yes. I think also notably, you know, Tim Michaels, if he were elected, he would be governor in 2024 when Wisconsin's governor is asked to certify the next presidential election. And, you know, Michaels wouldn't say definitively that he would do that. You know, he said he's a kind of a know it when I see it kind of guy, I believe was the way he put it. And he would look at the situation and make a decision then about how he would deal with it.
Sean, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. He talked to us today about the latest election news here in Wisconsin. Follow his reporting and our great team of reporters in general over at WPR.org. Coming up on Food Friday, heritage grains and how to use them. A cookbook author tells us about everything from oats to einkorn and barley and how to use them all in our cooking. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the U.S. Supreme Court blocked a Texas law from going into effect this week that would have prevented large social media companies from blocking certain content. We'll talk to an attorney about where that case goes from here and what it means for you. Now, if you're looking to add some variety to your baking, try using some farro flour or einkorn berries or another heritage grain. Our next guest works with a variety of grains, growing them, milling, and cooking with them. She says using different grains can add great flavor and texture, give options for people with special dietary needs, including gluten-free options, and they can help the environment. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gone against the grain with your cooking, using stuff apart from the typical all-purpose white and wheat flours? Do you use barley, farro, oats, durum, you name it? Have you found heritage grains accessible maybe in your local stores or markets? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Emma Zimmerman is the author of the cookbook, The Miller's Daughter, Unusual Flours and Heritage Grains. She's officially been experimenting with milling grains since 2011 with her dad. Emma, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about these grains.
What got you and your dad into this wide variety of grains and flours and growing them and milling them in the first place?
Yeah, so we're in Phoenix, Arizona, and there is a heritage grain that's been in this region for a while called White Sonora Wheat. And that was kind of our first foray into this whole world of heritage grains. And we started growing it. We were 10 acres with a local farmer. Loved it. Got some excitement from chefs and local bakers. And that just kind of led to like discovering this whole world of grains that have been forgotten. And we're kind of, you know, just sitting in seed banks, not getting eaten or enjoyed.
So it sounds like fun growing it and milling it and all. But for maybe that home cook who's listening right now, if they asked, what's in it for me? What would you tell them about opening up their eyes to some of this variety?
Well, I could, you know, go on about like health benefits of whole grains and all that stuff. I love like getting people excited about the flavors and kind of like, I always compare it to maybe coloring with, you know, the 64 pack of crayons. Like you just have a lot more options and a lot more, you know, that you can do with your creativity in the kitchen, having flour that's not just sort of like a white inert substance that doesn't quite offer anything. You know, it becomes more of a central player in your kitchen, which is really fun. The book, The Miller's Daughter, has 10 different grains and legumes. And there's just so many different ways that you can prepare these grains as well. So it's even beyond baking. If people aren't considering themselves bakers, there's something for everyone.
Well, let's check out one of the grains now. And I've used this. I don't actually know what it is. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Farro, F-A-R-R-O. Farro or Farro?
Yeah.
Farro.
Yes.
Okay,
you
great.
Can say either way, actually.
Excellent. Good. And then, like I said, I've cooked with it. I've eaten it. I don't actually know what it is. What is Farro?
So Farro is a very old grain. We call it an ancient grain because it's thousands of years old. It's sort of a precursor to what we know as modern wheat. Some people call it Farro because it is the Pharaoh's wheat. It's a very old variety that probably ancient Egyptians were eating. And it's a really nutty, deeply flavorful grain. Yeah, you can cook it whole like rice. So there's a bunch of salads in the book. It makes such a great salad. And you can mill it and turn it into flour. There's a Farro banana bread that has some chocolate in it as well. And those are some of my favorite recipes. Farro is pretty accessible as well right now. I think most people listening could probably find it either just in their local supermarket or at a local mill near them. But it's pretty well established here. It's really popular in Italian cooking as well.
Now, we've got that recipe. You shared it with us. It's up at WPR.org/Food Friday, the chocolate-flecked Farro banana bread. So what is having Farro? Now, this is like, it's not the whole Farro, as you said. It's like a Farro milled flour. What does that do? How does it make the banana bread different?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad that you have that recipe up. That's kind of my go-to when people ask, like, where do we start, you know, with this book? Because everyone, you know, banana bread, like, pretty accessible. Everyone can make banana bread, I hope.
It's not too hard. Even so, I can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not too hard. And I mean, I always have overripe bananas on hand. It always seems I'm like a little too ambitious buying bananas every week. But Farro flour is a great swap for that white flour. And it's a great way to kind of taste the difference in adding a stone milled ancient grain flour into your baking. People always love that recipe. It's so fun to serve it to friends and family because it tastes familiar, but it just has that extra layer of something else. So it always kind of starts a conversation about these grains.
Talking to Emma Zimmerman, author of the cookbook, The Miller's Daughter, Unusual Flours and Heritage Grains, Stories and Recipes from Hayden Flour Mills. You can join the Food Friday conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you like to cook or bake with different kinds of grains and flours? What are your favorites? What have you experimented with? Do you have a question for our guest? Maybe you tried it and it didn't come out so good. Maybe Emma could help you out. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Emma, a lot of times we're going to buy flour already milled. What are options for getting something that's in, you know, a harder, chunkier form if we want to get something and grind it up at home? Are there some we can do that with?
Yes, there. You could get into home milling. It's not something that I've personally explored, seeing as I own a flour mill. I can just go get my flour there.
Fair.
But yeah, there you can home mill anywhere, you know, from like a blender attachment to something like a little more substantial as a countertop mill or a hand mill. But that's really the ultimate. And that's how we got started, honestly, is my dad was baking bread and then he started milling his own flour to kind of you know, enhance the fresh taste of his flour. And one thing led to the next, and all of a sudden the mill, the home countertop mill, you know, got a little bit bigger and bigger and bigger until now we have a whole milling operation.
Mission creep for sure. Yeah. Let's check out some other grains. Now, barley, I just think of, you know, barley is barley, and you go and buy a package with the word barley on it. There's different kinds of barley, and you've got, I think, purple barley, for example. Can you tell us about some of the variety in the barley world?
Yeah. So there is bronze barleys. We grow a variety of Tibetan purple barley. It's just really fun. It is purple in the field. Like, so if you were, you know, flying overhead with a drone, you could actually see this lavender colored field. And then the seeds are very deep, rich purple. So just from, you know, from that, like, it's so fun to cook with. There's a recipe in the book that's a barley lemonade. And really pretty, like, violet purple color. And it's very delicious and a refreshing. And that's always really fun to surprise people with. But yeah, barley, I think, has kind of that, like, pearly stew reputation. And I tried to steer away from that and make barley a little more exciting. There's a lot of cuisines throughout the world that use barley as well. So a lot of inspiration there. But yeah, purple barley is the one that we grow and really love at the mill, even though there's a lot of different varieties. I mean, if your food can be more colorful, why not?
Well, here's the one that got me, because I grew up with my Polish grandma's pierogies. And you've got a purple potato pierogi using ideally this purple barley. Tell us about this one.
Yes. So I hope someone will make this recipe. But
I might.
It's a purple barley, dumpling and, you know, wrapper. And then the purple potato inside. So it's like purple on purple. I love cooking with color in mind. So anytime I can play with color and also make it delicious, I just can't resist. So that one was really fun to do. And yeah, like if you make bread with purple barley flour, that bread will have a lavender color. Like, it's just really fun.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Emma Zimmerman, author of the cookbook, The Miller's Daughter, Unusual Flours and Heritage Grains. She's talking with us about how we can experiment in the kitchen with more than just that all-purpose, say, white flour by using a lot of different heritage grains, other kinds of flours. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever tried milling your own flour from, say, wheat berries or whatever before? How did it go? Do you use different kinds of flours in your cooking or baking, different kinds of grains? If you are gluten-free for one reason or another, what kind of grains have you had success with where stuff comes out with great flavors and textures? Or do you have questions for our guest about what to do with all this stuff? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Remember, we got that banana bread made with farro recipe. There's some chocolate in there too. Find it at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with Emma Zimmerman, author of the cookbook The Miller's Daughter, Unusual Flours and Heritage Grains. After experimenting with growing and milling grains for more than a decade with her dad, Emma's with us to talk about using a lot of different types of grains and flours in our own cooking and baking. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences using different grains, maybe growing or milling them yourself, or your questions, 800-642-1234. Linda joins us in Milwaukee. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I happen to be Jewish, and, you know, we Jews have the holiday of Passover, and that lasts 8 days, and you were not allowed to eat any leavened products. Nothing with yeast, no leavening. And the reason for that is because when we had to leave Egypt, we had no time to let the bread rise. And so we have to be very ingenious, you know, because matzah is just flour and water. So I make something that's Persian. It's called a spinach mina. And what it is you wet matzah and you put it in an oiled or buttered or grease, whatever, 8-inch pan. I use glass. And then you layer in meat, cooked chopped meat. You can put almonds in it if you want to. And then I make about a 3-inch layer of that. And then you put another piece of wet matzah on top and you pour a beaten egg over the whole thing and bake it.
Wow.
And it's absolutely delicious.
That sounds fantastic, Linda. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Emma, do you have favorite flours or grains that work well as a bread-like product that is unleavened, that's you know, no yeast in the picture?
Yeah. Oh, that recipe sounded so totally good. Yes, there's a few cracker recipes in the book. That's with a type of wheat called Durum. It's a pasta wheat. We grow a heritage variety called Bluebeard Durum that has these blue awns on it, kind of creating this blue beard effect in the field. But that's a really delicious pasta wheat. And it also makes really great crackers because it gives that same kind of like firm crunch to it. But yeah, a lot of the recipes in the book, I don't do a lot of bread kind of baking. There's a few things, but not a lot of yeast. So it's not, you know, when people hear about ancient and heritage grains, they think of those sourdough kind of European style loaves. But in this case, I really wanted to showcase all the other ways that you could use these grains. Maybe if sourdough is a little bit intimidating or using yeast can be a little bit intimidating, but quick breads, crackers, whole grain salads, you know, waffles, pancakes, there's so many things that you can do with these grains. And in fact, it's almost better to keep things really simple. That way you can taste the actual flavor of the grain as you're baking.
Thanks a lot for that call, Linda, at 800-642-1234. Sharon joins us next in Appleton. Sharon, hi.
Hi. Well, I'm gluten sensitive, not celiac, and I've used gluten-free grains for years. And I never, never buy gluten-free flours pre-mixed because they're just filled with potato starch and corn starch and no whole grains. So I keep about a dozen different gluten-free flours in my refrigerator almost any time. And I'll just take any recipe. I don't do yeasted things because that's too hard. But quick bread, cookies, pancakes, waffles, etc. If it says a cup of flour, I'll just grab maybe three different kinds of gluten-free flours, a third a cup of each, unless I'm using coconut. And then I use a little less because coconut soaks up the moisture just a lot. And then just start to play with how the different textures you get from the different flours.
Sharon, what are a couple of your rock star flours that you go to?
Sorghum. So sorghum and coconut if you want something really moist.
Excellent.
And then if you want something a little bit lighter, and I will go with rice or millet. I put in, like for pancakes, I love buckwheat, a little buckwheat, but not straight.
Okay. Sharon, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for sharing all that with us. Emma, one thing that popped to my mind is you've got a whole chapter on chickpea flour in the book.
Yes. Yeah. So chickpea is also one of the gluten-free flours. There's a whole world. I mean, I covered 10 types of flours and grains, but there's, as Sharon mentioned, sorghum and buckwheat and so many other things you wouldn't typically think that you can turn into flour. Chickpeas are great because they're naturally gluten-free. They grow really well as a cover crop for wheat, so they're great to rotate in. You can make such amazing things from chickpea flour. There's a chickpea flour pound cake in the book that I really love with this tahini glaze and a baharat spice. You make chickpea fries. Those always go really fast. It's a really fun flour to kind of play with, and a great option if you're trying to stay away from gluten. I will say that a lot of our customers who come to us because they are gluten sensitive and they find that they can eat these older varieties, these heritage grains, these ancient grains with no reaction. So that's really hopeful too. Another reason that we think these grains are worth growing.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Emma Zimmerman is with us on this week's edition of Food Friday. Her new cookbook is called The Miller's Daughter, Unusual Flours and Heritage Grains, Stories and Recipes from Hayden Flour Mills. Emma, let's talk about the grain that you mentioned earlier, started it all, that white Sonora flour. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, white Sonora wheat is the first wheat that came to North America The legend is that it was brought over by Jesuit German missionaries, you know, bringing the foods from home. Also needed wheat flour to, you know, make the Eucharist. Yeah, so it's been here in the Southwest for 400 years. So it became acclimated, what we call became a land race. One of the reasons we love it is because of that story and because it takes less water to grow, which is a huge thing for us here in Arizona. We need to take a lot of care with our water. So having a crop that's arid adapted is really great. And, you know, so probably something we need to do more of in the future. It tastes great. It's so beautiful. I actually got married 10 years ago, and that was my wedding bouquet because I thought it was just so beautiful. So
awesome. Now, you mentioned some of the environmental benefits there. Can you talk? That's something you talk about a little bit in the book, and we've been focusing on, you know, cooking with the stuff. But what are some more of the environmental benefits of checking out these wider varieties of ancient grains?
Yeah, they are really great, especially in conjunction with regenerative agriculture practices. They're really great for the soil. They demand less inputs. So they can be, you know, a lower cost to a farmer and, yeah, lower water. So, yeah, that's all part of the story, you know, beyond just the flavor and kind of the excitement and the creativity that comes from using these grains. We also think they're kind of part of our future, and we need to go back and recover a lot of that biodiversity that we've lost in the industrial food system. And the best way to, you know, promote biodiversity in our food system is to eat these grains and, of course, to have really good recipes that inspire people to use them.
There's been some chatter among Central Time producers about what your farm and operation looks like. Can you kind of paint us a picture of what we would see if we were taking a tour?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, so Hayden Flour Mills is actually a historic mill that started in Tempe, Arizona. But our mill is not located there anymore. We restarted the mill. It had been out of business for a while. So in 2011, my dad and I restarted it. And we actually are now located on the farm, kind of on the outskirts of Phoenix, where we grow a lot of our wheat. So it's very cool that we're kind of this vertically integrated mill. We have the farmer growing the fields, you know, just out the door. And then the seed cleaning operation right there next door to us, the mill. We have this beautiful Italian stone mill. It's still very artisanal. It's not a giant grain elevator that you might have, you know, seen in most states have these big mills. It's much, much smaller. And then it goes out the door right there. So it gets turned into pancake mixes, all these different kinds of flour. Flour for chefs and restaurants and bakeries, as well as flour for, you know, grocery stores. And then, of course, our online store, people, home bakers can just order directly from us. So, yeah, it's a really fun place to work. It's a fun place to be. We used to offer tours. We don't do that anymore since COVID. But we loved showing people, like, where their flour came from and connecting them directly with the source of their grains and flour.
Emma, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Emma Zimmerman, author of the cookbook, The Miller's Daughter, Unusual Flours and Heritage Grains. She joined us today to talk about why she enjoys using unique flours and grains in her recipes. You can find one of those recipes at wpr.org/foodfriday. It is a chocolate-flecked farro or farro banana bread. Again, find that at wpr.org/foodfriday. Maybe make some over the weekend, and you can drop it off at the studio for me on Monday. That would work out really well, actually. That would work for me. Also, if you have experiences cooking, baking, whatever, with a lot of the different grains we've been talking about or others off the beaten path, you could tell us all about it. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or send us an email, ideas@wpr.org. Maybe you've got a recipe of your own you'd like to share. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, meet the director of a Wisconsin office on school safety that's part of the state's Department of Justice. Learn about efforts to keep kids and staff safe, especially with a recent high-profile shooting in a school in Texas. Join that conversation and more. That's coming up Monday morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. We met the author of a new book on the history of Star Trek yesterday. No surprise, a lot of you called in with your thoughts and memories, and we heard from more of you on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'll share a few here. Chris writes, Star Trek Deep Space Nine was my favorite series by far. Wide array of compelling characters, many of whom straddled moral ambiguity and dualities. Sisko had quite a temper and was occasionally operating in gray areas for a Starfleet officer. Garak has a complex and private personal history, which made it difficult to know if he was friend or foe. She goes on with thoughts on other characters. Billy writes, my kids are sick of hearing me talk about how important Star Trek was. Rick says, big fan of Star Trek, binge watching everything. James says, Strange New Worlds, that's one of the new ones, is really, really good. And TV Tong says, a quote I love and believe in, it's possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. It's not a weakness, that is life, from Captain Picard. Our guest actually quoted that one yesterday, too. Still time for you to share your Star Wars favorites. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time.